Green flag at the back. The long run to turn one is 5 lights away. And the Mexico City Grand Prix is go with a good reaction time for the Ferraris. But Max Verstappen is trying to dart between the pair of them. The slipstreaming that we normally see is not happening. Verstappen's got a good launch. He's already up to second. I reckon that's the race lead on the inside line. Checo Perez trying to go around the outside. He's made contact. He's made contact with Charles Leclerc into the first corner. Perez spins round. Leclerc goes over the road and takes back P1. But he overtook on the grass and he's got damage at the front of the car. Max Verstappen turns P3 on the grid to the lead in Mexico City. Dramatic opening corner of the lap as Daniel Ricciardo goes wheel to wheel with Lewis Hamilton. Ricciardo will stay ahead of the 7-time world champion into turn 5, but Hamilton getting on the power, trying to keep all 4 wheels on the road. He finds himself up a place to 5th position.
Great launch from both the Red Bull cars. No draft needed, no slipstream needed for Max Verstappen. Just split the Ferraris, and you see Checo Perez with that draft. Tries to go 3 wide and redo what Max did back in 21, late on the brakes on the outside. But it's just, there's just not enough room. He tried to force the issue a little bit, tried to squeeze Leclerc down, but he had Verstappen on the inside of him. Maybe he didn't know they were 3 wide at the time.
And yeah, look, he drove straight down the middle of the racetrack there. No fault can be apportioned to Charles Leclerc. Meanwhile, Max, clean apex, not even locking up as he braked into the first turn.
Oh, is Hamilton going to take a look here?
Hamilton going deep to the inside, to the dirty part of the racetrack, and Hamilton makes the move that has been coming for a couple of laps now. He fights his way by.
Clean stop from the Red Bull crew, 2.4 seconds.
Our best bet is to extend and go optimal while stopping.
You can do at this pace? Question.
Might not be for Lando Norris going the long way round. Valtteri Bottas runs out of tyres. That is a tidy pass. That's the sort of thing you need to do if you're going to efficiently make your way through the field. You're seeing Lewis Hamilton on the side of your picture to see where he is in relation to the Ferrari team. 2.3 second stop is decent, but Lewis Hamilton is disappearing down the main straight. Lewis Hamilton came in earlier on to get the benefit for the fresher rubber, and he has track position over the Ferrari driver. Unusual for Lando Norris, because he's been fighting at the front for the last half of a season, but today he's fighting from the back. Not what he wanted to do, but these passes have been clean, and there's another one. Pass Alex Albon and up to 8th place. We're on board with Kevin Magnussen around the final corner. Does he get wide through there? Oh, it's dusty and dirty out there if you get wide. And K-Mag taking the route that I took to the commentary box. And he was lucky with all the marbles, all the dust, to keep it pointing in the right direction. We go on board with a man from Monaco about to hit his marks. The team will go to work. How quickly can they service the car? Brand new. Hard tyres being bolted on. 2.4 is strong once again. And Kevin Magnussen has had a big crash. Kevin Magnussen off a moment ago. This time he's off again, but far more significant. And on lap 33 of 71, Magnussen finds the barriers, and this could change the complexion of the Grand Prix.
Oh. Something let go.
Yeah,
something let go for sure.
Failure on that car.
Oh, you can see it.
There you go. Left rear.
Had the wide moment on the exit at turn 17 and then into the barriers at turn 8 on the next lap. The red flag is understandably flying around this circuit. The barrier is damaged. Most importantly, the driver is okay, but a big impact with the wall for Kevin Magnussen. Here come the lights for the second start of the Mexico City Grand Prix. And the race is on once again. Max Verstappen will cut across Charles Leclerc. Charles Leclerc is under pressure, though, for Lewis Hamilton. Great reaction time for Carlos Sainz. Sainz wasn't able to do anything with it. And now Daniel Ricciardo is looking to try and go down the inside. No one's been able to get past Max Verstappen, who leads into turn one. Then it's Charles Leclerc. Then it's Lewis Hamilton. Sainz makes his way through. And it's Russell who gets past Daniel Ricciardo. Ricciardo doesn't want to give it up, though. And they will make their way through turn three. It was mighty close, though.
Just horrific start from Lando Norris. Was slow off the line and lost, 4 spots. He was really the big loser on that one. So all the progress that Norris had made so far in the race has been undone as side by side here.
Hamilton to the inside. Hamilton to second position. He gets past Charles Leclerc. The crowd no longer have Sergio Perez to clear, but they enjoyed that move at the first turn of the racetrack. Hamilton going for that medium tire early. Oh, it's going to be very tight. Contact between the two of them. Yuki Tsunoda trying to get past Oscar Piastri. Piastri on a different part to the racetrack. It is dirty and dusty off the racing line. Driving on his mirrors now, the rookie Australian Yuki Tsunoda trying to force a way by. These hard tyres could allow him to attack in the final stages of this Grand Prix.
Maybe I was a bit early with was there contact or not. Certainly we had Oscar. Oh yeah, there was. Tyre to tyre touch there.
Oh, and this is tight once again. It's contact once again, and round goes Yuki Tsunoda. Contact at turn two the lap before. Contact this time at turn one. AlphaTauri are so desperate to put two cars in the points, but that chance has disappeared. Around the outside of turn number four to get the apex for five, Lando Norris goes past another car. What a cameo he is having in this second part of the Grand Prix. Is this going to be the swap? The answer is yes. They swap positions.
Yeah, that was smart from Oscar as well. Having a small lift just backing off on the straight cost you much less time than you would imagine.
We're on board with the British driver up against his old teammate who starts in Grand Prix 246 today. So he knows how to defend down into turn number four. Norris trying to go all the way around the outside, outside of four, inside of five. Another move completed. What a second stint this has been in the Grand Prix. And we see Lando Norris forcing his rival off the racing line to pass the racetrack he doesn't want. Tries the up and under. Is it going to be another classic move? Elbows out. Lando Norris has done it again. The crowd adore it. It's another fine overtake and a great way to take fifth place. Into the 13th corner, and that is going to be a spin round for Lance Stroll, and Bottas making contact with the Aston Martin, and that is clumsy stuff, but great action for the 30,000 sat in this part of the racetrack. It's going to be the sweetest 16th victory of the season for Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen wins the Mexico City Grand Prix. Across the line for second place comes Lewis Hamilton with the fastest lap on the 71st and last tour to take another podium. Just a fourth podium finish of the season for Charles Leclerc.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome in. This is season 5, episode number 37 of the Outlap F1 podcast. We are proud members of the Ship It Studios podcast network, and this is the 2023 Mexico GP race review, and we'll tack on a little bit of Brazil preview because this is leg 2 of the triple header, and it's just more efficient to do this in one shot as opposed to 5. So you've got Andy, and as you can see, we've got the triple box tonight. Deanna has joined us, and Cody has joined us as well. Folks, it is good to see you once again, and how are we all doing?
I'm doing great. Ignore if I am eating my dinner in the middle of this, but we're doing our best to get everything done.
The Grubhub app serves us well. Cody, how's it going, man?
I'm doing all right, too. I'm just going from one busy weekend to the next, it seems. But it's a good thing. It's keeping me distracted from the fact that it suddenly got really cold here. So not a fan. 2 out of 10. Would rather be back in Texas. But
I was going to say, I literally thought this. I'm like, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, we were sitting in the hot sun on Saturday. It's 95 degrees, and we were slamming Powerades for cover. And now there's snow on the ground here. What the actual hell? Crazy. So yeah, I'm in the hoodie for warmth, not for fashion tonight. But anyway, we do have a race to talk about that was in Mexico. And if you found our show, welcome, as many would say, welcome along. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and of course, YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle. If you're on YouTube, you can click the like and subscribe button, and you'll help us get our content to you a little bit faster. If you're on your favorite podcasting app, if you click the 5-star button, that will also help us, again, get our content to you a little bit quicker, come up a little bit better in search results if you like and enjoy what you're seeing and what you're hearing. You can email the show, chat now at outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. The wonderful website, www.outlapf1.com, takes you there. Thank you, as always, to our continued monetary supporters who enable us to get new equipment and new microphones and, look, new webcam. Hey, because mine kind of died last time out. So thank you so much to Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quentin Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and, of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of the what we call the Outlap F1 Nation, you can see our link tree in our show notes. It's our anchor page, $1, $5, all goes in to investing in new equipment, upgrading the equipment we currently have, and making the show better. As just a reminder, Christmas is coming, and you can take advantage of our code, OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP with the good folks at Manscaped. That'll get you 20% off and free shipping. Shipping can be very expensive and can be a fun thing to be avoided. So take advantage of that if you'd like to. And our buddy Vincenzo Landino has his F1 shirt line. It's F1 quality merch, not necessarily the F1 quality price. Go to www.thef1guy.com to check those out. All right. So headlines of the day, Mexico style. Cody, I'll let you go first. What you got?
My headline is, why, Checo? Why? It's not even so much as why did he try it, but why did it go so wrong? Because I think we got pretty much the entire race's worth of excitement in the first 5 seconds of the race, and it just went so poorly for Checo. Within one turn at his home race, he's beat up, I'm beat up. I really wish he had had something to show for it in Mexico City, but he doesn't.
Alas. D, what's your thought on headline?
Yeah, it's just, I'm so sorry to the country of Mexico. I think just in general, just feeling the life come out of that crowd the second that that happened, and we'll get more into the incident itself. But you just know that all of those people are there for him. And there's, I don't think any event, maybe Zandvoort, where there's so much support there. Well, definitely Zandvoort for one driver, and the love that they have for that driver is unmatched. And so to see him go out in the first quarter was a little heartbreaking. But I do think, especially in recent memory, this was one of the better Mexico Grand Prix, and honestly, kind of up there with one of the better races of the year, in my opinion. I think there was some interest, some intrigue, and then we'll get into all that.
Yeah, so my headline is, this was anything but a straightforward Mexico weekend, which was a good thing. Better than in recent memory, that's for sure. It definitely had my attention throughout, where usually it's lap one and go home. But we still ended up with kind of normal service at the front, in spite of all of the twists and the turns that were kind of thrown at Red Bull and one Max Verstappen. He still manages to come out on top yet again. Record breaker. He breaks his own record, Cody. So you had mentioned that you wanted to see records being broken. So there's a star, yes, in the cap there for that. But we'll get into all that in just a little bit. So we will rewind and we will start with our qualifying recap. It's our first non-sprint in a while. So let's see if we can cue that up here. All right. So going out in without being classified, he did not manage to set a time. That was the number two of Logan Sargeant in the Williams. P19, big surprise here. Lando Norris in the McLaren. We'll have to talk about that. P18, Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin. Continued struggles for them. P17, Kevin Magnussen. P16 was Esteban Ocon. In P15, although he would not stay there because he was changing his engine components, that was Yuki Tsunoda. P14 was Alex Albon. P13 was Fernando Alonso. P12 was Nico Hülkenberg, and P11 was Pierre Gasly. The top 10 from 10 to 1. P10 saw Joe Granu. P9 saw Valtteri Bottas. P8 was George Russell. P7 was Oscar Piastri. P6 was Lewis Hamilton. P5, Sergio Checo Perez. P4, star of qualifying for me, Daniel Ricciardo in the AlphaTauri. P3, Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. P2, Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari. And in P1, Charles Leclerc and the other Ferrari with a lap time of 1:17.166. So a bit of a mixed up grid for sure. Oh, I love it when it fades out perfectly like that. That's amazing.
It sounds so good.
And I, I did not plan that, but it's nice that it came together. Thoughts on the qualifying? Cody, I'll start with you, and then Dee, and then I'll chime in.
I think everyone was really surprised by an all-Ferrari front row, especially considering that they didn't seem to be anywhere in any of the practice sessions. They're just kind of, you know, moseying around. I don't think anyone expected anything from them. And then suddenly, here they are, and they're at the front, and they got it locked out, and we're all thinking maybe, just maybe, something interesting will happen. And as you'll see when we get to the race, didn't go very well for Ferrari at the start. But, man, Charles Leclerc, just so great over one lap pace and taking another pole. I've heard jokes about his trophy case just being nothing but tires at this point, which is kind of cool, kind of sad. But, yeah, if they ever get that Ferrari figured out with keeping up race pace, like, look out, because he's going to be starting from the front and running away at the start of everything.
Yeah, I think just in general, though, bizarre qualifying session. I guess it was the temperatures, which the cars were so sensitive to, because in practice, the Williams, specifically of Albon, was so competitive and so close to Verstappen, and I think that they were kind of expecting that. I mean, I don't think they really understood why they were so fast, and then there was like a slight temperature difference in qualifying, and it just went away from them. In Q2, it looked like Mercedes was going to do what Ferrari did, but they just did not have the pace in Q3, and then Ferrari come out of absolutely nowhere. So that was just bizarre, but I think overall at the season, it is crazy how close qualifying is, and it does give a lot of false sense of hope when we go into the weekends, but I think that is not the Red Bull specialty over a lap. And so I think those sessions still are fun because you kind of never know what's going to happen and people do have a chance, which is nice. And I think that gap between the entire field is closed over the course of the season, which is fun. But my other thing that I wanted to bring up, and I don't have a solution to it, but it is this backing up in the pit lane. It looks ridiculous, but backing people up in sector three is dangerous, and I don't know where you go from here. But it seemed like after Singapore they were like, we didn't penalize Max, we probably should have penalized him, but now we're back here again, and they're like, no, we're not going to penalize him. So I guess we're just fine with this. I don't know what the solution is, but it seems ridiculous.
I mean, you actually read the FIA decision, and the FIA says, we don't have a better answer, so we like this better than everybody in the last sector doing it. So, yeah, it's fine. Forget our race director's notes. Forget everything else. I guess it's all fine for now. But so, yeah, I don't have a real better solution other than maybe you don't make the end of the pit lane, or you extend the track to actually include the end of the pit lane, or something like that, or you have to maintain some sort of a minimum speed on the pit lane, because people just stopping and parking their cars, like, yep, you saw, it's just stupid. And there was nothing anybody could do. Like, Max is literally in the middle, and you can't go to the left because that's where there's people, there's crew, and you can't go to the right because if you do that, you have to assume that car, like, the only defense is like that car is not going to move. So what do? You're just sitting there losing tire temperature, and you're at the mercy of the first guy out. So yeah, not also a good look. But yeah, big stories out of qualifying. Obviously, the Ferraris 1-2. Hello, one lap pace. It's nice to see you. Ferrari didn't get it while they were so fast, but they managed to hook it up. Daniel Ricciardo, where has this been? Talk about coming up out of nowhere. And just, you know, AlphaTauri, where has this been? You know, maybe this is a track that just really suits them because, you know, if you have an inherent draggy car, dirty downforce here is a good thing. You're trying, everybody's running their maximum downforce settings, even though because of the altitude. So maybe that just brings that car into its window and maybe that explains some of it. But Danny also had to do the laps. So really good for him. Would have liked to have seen what Yuki Tsunoda could have done. But really good teammate by using Yuki as the guy to get the toe from. So, you know, that was also very good. Got to talk about
he did that lap in Q3 on his own. So
yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he still managed to do it. Got to talk a little bit about what happened to Lando. One of the few times I said this was kind of a McLaren fuck up, I think would be with the honest case, because he comes out in Q1 and I see medium tires, and that made me go, huh, what you doing there? Didn't understand it. And then he goes out to set his first flying lap, and he's like a half a second down in the second sector, which was all throughout the practices where they were the strongest, and then they called him in right away. So I just assumed that they called him in because they looked at it and they said, this lap time's going to suck. Let's get off these tires. Let's change it. That's not even all of it. Apparently, they didn't put enough fuel in the goddamn car. So they didn't think he was going to come around again or he was going to end up stopping on track. So they had to call him in. So he doesn't set a time there. They send him out on soft tires with about 6 minutes to go. By the time you do the slow install lap, he then tries to do a flying lap. It's not good. He goes off track. It probably would have been time to lead it anyway. It shows up that 121. Well, then he tried to go out again on the last flying lap, and that all gets ruined because Fernando Alonso does spin cycle impersonation and causes a yellow flag right in the first sector. So that's kind of how Lando got his weekend became a lot harder. Combination of one, he didn't do it, and two, the team didn't help him. So that was annoying.
Yeah, the no fuel thing is pretty bad. I mean, you only got to go for two laps, right? Like three maybe, I guess, because you're going out, you're going around, you're doing your in lap. So like fuel for three laps can't be that hard, right?
And I knew it was bad when they just called him in and they wouldn't tell him why. And they're like, no, you just have to box. And I'm like, okay, something's up. Like I thought maybe it was a mechanical problem. But then as it turned out, they didn't put enough fuel in the dang car. But anyway, yeah. So we'll leave the qualifying there. We thought we were going to have this awesome grid, mixed up grid, fast cars at the back, some different people up at the front. So I guess we'll turn the page and we'll start with the back markers. And it starts, the non-classified finishers, unfortunately, start with the home hero, Sergio Checo Perez. He gets the dreaded DNF after lap one. Kevin Magnussen had a pretty scary looking crash. The good news is he walked away from it relatively unscathed. Did bring out a red flag that basically did kind of change some parts of the race for some. And then Fernando Alonso also did not finish the race late in the day. They called it quits on the Aston Martin. So the classified finishers, P17 was Lance Stroll. P16, Logan Sargeant, who probably deserved a better classification fate than what he got. We'll talk about him in a little minute. P15 was Valtteri Bottas. P14 was João Grandjean. And P13 was Nico Hülkenberg. I think the place to start here is probably with Checo. Cody, it was your headline. Take us through what you saw and what you thought about it.
Yeah, it feels really weird now going straight from qualifying to the race.
What? There's no sprint shootout? What? There's no sprint race? Hang on, we got you coming. Yeah, we'll be back to that next week. But anyway, Cody, thoughts on back markers, and probably we'll start with Checo.
So Checo, we had a very, very exciting start to the race, and I was on the edge of my seat for a whole 5 seconds because race starts, and Max Verstappen gets a great start. He's threading the needle between the two Ferraris. So I was on the edge of my seat already from that. And then Sergio Perez gets like an awesome slipstream and a great start of his own as well, coming up behind Max Verstappen. And he sees a chance and he goes for it. And he goes around to the outside, brings it to three wide. He and Max are sandwiching Charles Leclerc. And for just a few seconds, I thought that he had pulled off an awesome move and was going to take the lead. And I was ready for the whole crowd to go nuts. And then he turns just a little too early, or just maybe it wasn't even going to happen. Didn't probably have the room going three wide. But he starts his turn. He comes across the front of Charles Leclerc, takes out a little bit of Charles Leclerc's wing, but he kind of goes up and over, I think it was Charles Leclerc's wheel, and his car gets kind of launched up in the air, goes off into the runoff area. When it comes down, you know, he manages to bring it around the track, but goes in the pits, and team knows that he's screwed right out of the way, or right away. His underside of his car is damaged. Suspension is damaged. He's not going anywhere, and he's sitting there pounding on the steering wheel. And I felt so bad for him because, man, if he had pulled that off, it would have been the coolest shit. But wasn't meant to be. I heard that, you know, I think they were kind of even saying it on the broadcast that some fans were leaving the stadium because of Checo being out of the race. Knowing how much F1 tickets cost, I certainly would have stuck around. But yeah, it's very sad, very disappointing to see him have such a good start and look like he had it on, and then just to for it to all be over so quickly. I'm sure it was pretty heartbreaking to all the fans of his that were at the track.
Yeah, my comment on this, it's the old motorsport adage. You can't win on the first lap, but you can lose. And he certainly did that. And I think, I mean, the start was pretty incredible, but I think you cut your losses in that situation. So you back out. You're easily, even if you come out in that corner in third, you're easily going to pass Claire. It was one of the weekends where he was way closer to Max in pace. Also, one of the worst times he could have done that, because he got out-qualified by Ricardo in the AlphaTauri, who was probably number one in line to replace him in that seat. So I think just a combination of all of that, and to be at home in Mexico when all of these people were supposed to support you and kind of hopefully bring you up and have this resurgence and all that stuff. And I think just seeing that collapse was pretty heartbreaking. But yeah, I think he just, and he kind of said it in the interview during the race, he just saw the win. He saw kind of getting to the lead of that race and nothing else. I don't think that move was ever really going to be on. That was a lot to ask with three cars going out of the corner, and the speed at which he was going to make that corner, I think too, was probably going to be a bit marginal, to say the least. So it's just so unfortunate. And to see where he was kind of coming into that team and where he was in the beginning of the year, it's unfortunate to see. And I think Lewis had said it during this week, where it's like, if I heard Toto talking to me about me the same way that, like, what's his face with missing an eye, and that's the only thing I can think of right now,
Marco, yeah,
talks about, like, that would affect me mentally too. And I was like, anyway, yeah, so I just feel for him. But unless like miracles happen in the next couple races, I think this unfortunately would be the end of the line of knowing that team.
Yeah, I mean, the adage that I keep thinking of is desperate times call for desperate measures, and that's kind of what encapsulated Checo in those moments. You know, he got a decent start. The Ferraris got a terrible start, both of them. Mm-hmm. So any hope of what you kind of thought was maybe you could see some Ferrari formation to try to block Max out or keep him out was gone after, I think, the first 200 meters. And you know, now Max is there, and now here comes Checo on the outside. To say that it's a ambitious move is probably being really, really nice, because I don't see a universe where those three into one ever gets to where Checo's going to be leading and trying to pull that move off on the outside. And you saw it later with some other guys. You know, I mean, we'll talk about the Piastri-Sonoda thing. Same kind of move, but unless you are three quarters to almost 90% ahead, there's no way you're cutting that off and still making that corner. At best, you're going to end up having to take to the grass and at least give one of those positions back, if you're lucky. Leclerc has nowhere to go. I mean, what do you do if you're Leclerc? I mean, even if you tried to break. I mean, the way the Checo was so close to him rear-to-rear tire collision is going to happen no matter what, because there's no room. There's literally no room for Leclerc to go. So, yeah, I mean, it sucks for all of the fans who we know.
Just wish Leclerc would have went further to the right.
Maybe a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, it sucks for all of the fans who were there, obviously, for one guy. And it is a Checo love fest when he is there. And you could physically feel the air leave the atmosphere there. And it's one of those things, like, the only other time I can ever think about it is like an overtime hockey game where the home team is facing elimination and they lose. And you just, it's palpable how much, you know, you know, if somebody else scores and you just watch the air and all the tension leave a place within 5 seconds. That's kind of what happened there. But yeah, I don't think that move was ever, I don't see a universe where that move ever works, unfortunately, for Checo there. Any other thoughts? I did kind of want to talk a little bit about Logan Sargeant while we're in the back markers. Probably deserved more of like a P12 finish. In fact, that's where he was, but it was a fuel pump issue that ended up causing Williams to call him in on, ironically enough, the last lap. They were so worried about it that apparently they thought it was going to damage the power unit. And of course, now we are getting to the end of the schedule where we're talking maybe about power units and the end of those allocations. So yeah, probably this, I think overall, if you look at the day he had, at least the race he had, it's two decent races in a row. I mean, it's not points, but I think he did the job this weekend. I mean, what were you guys' thoughts?
Yeah, it wasn't, I mean, it was pretty much under the radar, I think, at least from the commentary's perspective, for most of the race. But you know, barring the fact that he had a mechanical failure, he would have, at the very least, finished the race, which is more than we can say about Logan Sargeant for a lot of races before the United States Grand Prix. So that would have been good. And he would have, you know, he would have had a decent finish. He wouldn't have been last. So, you know, I feel like I'm kind of like, you know, pulling out of nothing here for compliments to him. But yeah, it wasn't bad. It was, you know, definitely more respectable than he's performed lately. And yeah, it kind of sucks to see that he's got to retire on the last lap. You know, it's like, couldn't I just maybe gone around one more? Like, is it really going to cause that much damage? Can I at least finish? No.
Yeah, I think my comment on Stroll is, A, I just thought it was funny that he, from qualifying, got a 10-place grid penalty to drop him from P20 to P20. but I think he finished, or would have finished, ahead of the Haases, ahead of the Alfa Romeos, and that's what he needs to be doing. So I think for him, and starting at the back of the grid, that was a respectable performance. So I think the things where you just kind of keep your head down, move under the radar, as you've said many times, Andy, that is what we need to do. And I think this was a decent performance from him. So
yeah, not we'll being noticed it. For all the wrong reasons, yep. which is therefore a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before we leave
the other thing, I will.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. You're probably about to say what I was going to say. So go for it.
All right. So before we leave the backmarkers, I was going to bring up Kevin Magnussen and the incident that brought out the red flag. Looked like a very nasty suspension failure. A bit of a it took out a good chunk of the Armco. Did you guys think it was a red flag worthy, or because I mean Max came on the radio and was pretty critical of the situation, thinking it should have been more of just a safety car, let them finish. So I guess that's kind of a question. What did you guys think of that? Did you think it was worthy of a red flag? I thought it was fine. I didn't have an objection to it at the time.
I think it makes things more exciting when you have the red flag and you're starting again from the standing start. And it overall, it's going to be more safe. You know, they had a lot of, I'm sure, a lot of debris to clean up from that accident because it was pretty high impact and, you know, crash like that, you know, we saw K-Mac get out of the car right away. So it seemed like he was okay, but you never know. And so from the safety perspective, probably a better idea to go with the red flag. I feel like it could have been a safety car. They've cleaned up accidents similar to that under a safety car before. And of course, Max isn't going to want the red flag in that situation because he just pit. So he's not going to get that freebie benefit, although wouldn't matter because he still came out in first. But he's also then going to start the race again from standing start, which for him is going to be probably riskier than a rolling start where he's already in front and gets to decide when to go. So yeah, he's going to be critical of that. But I thought it was all right. I feel like you could have probably gone either way with that. And it wouldn't have made too much more difference. And in the end, they're at this point, now that red flags seem to be, you know, a little bit more of a common way to go, they're going to probably go with that entertainment factor because we all like standing starts, and why not have another one?
Well, I was pretty much it was my personal opinion. I thought they were going to throw it pretty quickly. I mean, the problem was those tech part barriers because, like, those were pretty messed up, and God forbid somebody wrecks in that same corner again, and they needed to be repaired. But I think that takes time. How do you have a safety car? We're looking at about 10 laps under a safety car, and nobody wants that. So, like, I get the red flag. The frustration thing for me in this entire year, maybe this is a post-Massey thing and whatever, but, like, the time it takes to make a lot of these decisions drives me up a wall, like, to throw a VSC or safety car or red flag. And then you have people like, I know Norris pitted under the safety cars, and he dropped back a couple places on track. and a couple other people probably would have pitted, but decided to gamble on the red flag, and that worked out. Or I think like you can have more of those situations there. So I just wish if they're going to call these things, they would figure out a way to make these decisions a little bit quicker. But anyway, that's my two cents. And you also said something different than I was going to say. Aston Martin, it's so bad. It's just so unbelievably bad. They cannot figure out the setup, and then they double DNF, and I just anyway.
Yeah, it's not a good weekend for Aston Martin. Aston Martin just look, I mean, talk about the fall from grace. I mean, this was almost race-winning potentially car at the beginning of the year. Whatever direction they've gone in, and I know they've got like Dan Fallows, who was a Red Bull guy, so you'd think he was like a Newey disciple. Whatever this direction, stop it, turn it around, for the love of God, this isn't working. It's painful to watch in a lot of ways. What was I going to say? About the red flag. I think if it's a lap around like Spa or somewhere that's really long, maybe you can get away with a safety car and they can fix the tech pro. But because this lap is so short, and you know, you really don't have a whole lot of time even under safety car, I think you're right. You probably would lose 5 to 10, maybe 15 laps trying to do that. And then you're going to have people going, well, when can we go? This looks good. You know, you're going to have a ton of other complaining. So I do think it was probably the right thing to stop the action, let everybody get a reset. You know, yes, we had a standing start. It also goes to show how dirty one side of the track was, because I don't ever remember seeing a bigger dust cloud on a standing start before than that second restart. But yeah, I think probably overall the right move. But Dee, to your point, yeah, Aston Martin, ouch, house of pain for sure. All right, so we will leave the back markers there. We will now get into the midfield, where there's lots of juicy bits to talk about here. P12 was Yuki Tsunoda. Probably deserved a slightly better fate on his day. But P11 was Pierre Gasly. P10, Esteban Ocon. P9, Alex Albon. Points for Williams. That is significant. P8 was Oscar Piastri. P7, best finish of the year for him. Best finish, I think, for AlphaTauri this year. Daniel Ricciardo in that AlphaTauri takes the qualifying form and converts it to a good race result. P6 was George Russell. P5, starting from P17 to P5, Lando Norris in the McLaren. And P4 was Carlos Sainz falling back from second place on the grid. All right. So, Cody, I'll start with you. Big thoughts on the midfield.
Oh, man. I guess I will leave Lando Norris for you. Let's see here. We've got Yuki Tsunoda, who in a rare weekend where AlphaTauri looked like they had a decent pace, got very outqualified by Daniel Ricciardo. And then he looks like he's making up, you know, decent ground, getting some good work in during the race. And then he gets a little clumsy, I thought, when he's racing against Oscar Piastri. He's having a hard time getting around him. Ends up, that was Oscar Piastri, right? He ran into, and then he spun around. And punching his steering wheel while he's still going through the grass, manages to make it back on. But obviously, at that point, his race is pretty much ruined, and he finishes outside the points. And I got to imagine that we hear so much about how the pressure is on Sergio Perez because of Daniel Ricciardo coming back, being in that AlphaTauri, and pretty much eyeing up that Red Bull seat. But also, that's got to be putting a lot of pressure on Yuki Tsunoda too, because Yuki's been in the AlphaTauri seat now for a few seasons. He's had some really good days and some really bad days. And you've got Daniel Ricciardo, who comes in halfway through the season because he's been sitting on the sidelines, comes in, does a couple races, breaks his hand for a few more races, comes back and, you know, has a better result in this race than you've had all season. You know, I feel like that's got to be a lot of pressure on Yuki Tsunoda too. And maybe that's why he's, you know, racing a little clumsy in Mexico here. But I do feel bad for him. You know, he seemed like he had a good chance to get good results and get double points for AlphaTauri. And with how close the Constructors' Championship is there at the bottom, you know, a few points can make the difference between millions of dollars for where you're, you know, where you place in the Constructors' Championship. So Too bad he didn't get any points. As far as the other AlphaTauri driver, Daniel Ricciardo, fantastic to see him doing well, back in the points. Great qualifying. Did well in the race. I thought he was just going to maybe drop like a rock. It was not the case. He managed to do some pretty good racing, too. You know, he held off several drivers for a while. And yeah, overall, great finish. Happy to see Honey Badger getting some points again.
Yeah, I guess I'll just comment my comments on the AlphaTauris as well. I think Yuki Tsunoda the second time with Oscar Piastri just reminded me so much of lap one with Perez. I think those are kind of two guys in the Red Bull pool that are in a little bit of desperation mode, especially when Ricciardo is having such a great weekend, and they have right now five drivers that they have technically signed up with four spots. So over time, there's a lot of pressure, and you have One Eye Marco, there we go, talking about wanting Norris in there and all of this stuff. And so, like, anyway, I think that's another driver that's under pressure, and I think sometimes that comes out. And I don't know what he was doing. I'm surprised he didn't get a penalty. It seemed like he started to turn to turn one about 200 meters early. So, like, not really sure what was going on there. But yeah, it was just like, if you backed out, if you let Oscar have that spot, you're still scoring a point for AlphaTauri, which is massive this season. And you're there, luckily, with Ricciardo finishing in seventh. They're tied with Alfa Romeo, but they'll get the tiebreaker. But like, you could have been ahead of them in points, and who knows how important that's going to be in the next few races when you're only scrapping for like the very bottom points. So like, I think that's just another driver that did not help himself at all. Ricciardo, very, very much the opposite. And I think very shocked and impressed that he didn't just drop like a stone in the beginning. He held through there, and I think he probably would have finished higher without the red flag. And I knew it was going to happen. I knew they were going to cut away to Max being 5 minutes ahead, but him and Russell on the last lap, battling on the last lap, was awesome. Unfortunately, he couldn't get him, but it was just great to kind of see the old Danny come back to life. So yeah, happy to see it.
Yeah. I mean, to your points about Yuki, one, with respect to qualifying, he had changed his engine. So he was going to the back regardless. So that he may have shown decent pace in qualifying, we'll never know, because they literally used him as the sacrificial lamb on purpose. And it helped Danny get into Q3. And then even like we said, when we were doing qualifying, Danny still manages to do that, the Q3. With respect to the battle with Oscar there, he actually had banged wheels with Oscar like two, three times before that final collision. And that was kind of the end of it. So definitely reckless probably would be the way I would call that. You know, he would probably have more pace than Oscar, if I'm being honest, but just couldn't get the move done, couldn't get the move done cleanly. Oscar had definitely held his line. Did not see fault in anything he did. Stewards didn't see any fault, probably because it kind of self-adjudicated itself. So they kind of let it go. So I was kind of fine with that. But yeah, he definitely had pace, just couldn't turn it into anything. Again, we talked about Daniel Ricciardo. I enjoyed watching this guy be himself again. It looked like the Danny from the Red Bull days, back smiling, happy, confident in the car, able to do what he wanted with the car, able to manage the tires. That could be a harbinger of things to come. If that is, it's a great bet on yourself. It is a inspirational story for probably years to come, because he bet on himself and when nobody else did, and he might actually pull this inside straight off. So the case for that just got a big boost this weekend. If he can parlay that with another good result this weekend somehow, now we're cooking. Now we're really cooking with that. All right, so I guess here comes the Lando bit. I basically got in one race what it's like to be a Lando fan sometimes, because sometimes he will botch a lap in qualifying and have to start near the back and rally up and then get a red flag and get the safety car at exactly the time you needed the safety car. I actually yelled out, "That just did it." And then he comes into the pits and I watched it and I'm like, they're going to red flag it. And sure enough, they did. And I'm like, okay, well, at least he's on medium tires. They don't have a lot of life on him. Should be okay. And then here's the other part of being a Lando fan is he lines up on the grid and he absolutely gets killed at the start. I don't know what happened. He tried to throttle up in the second gear in the second phase of the start. He's just getting eaten alive. I'm watching him fall on the timing. I thought he crashed, but he didn't crash. He actually avoids all of that trouble, but now he's down in 15th spot. So he goes, and then the great part of Lando came out, where it was in other years, in prior years, he might have rallied, you know, yelled at his team, why'd you pit me there? Didn't hear any of that. He just went to work, and work he did, picking off guy after guy after guy, car after car after car after car. You able to figure out that if you got the jump in the Peraltada down that straight, that was the best shot to get somebody. And that's what he kept doing. Even though he wasn't like in the DRS at the beginning, if he was just in DRS, he was making it work on a line that wasn't necessarily the racing line and picking people off. The moves then against Ricciardo and against Russell at the end. Fantastic. Fantastic moves. Nobody else probably pulled those moves off as cleanly as they were. So that was exciting. It was from his onboard. It was exciting as hell to watch. His engineer just kind of sat back and just kept giving him gaps and guys ahead. And, you know, you look at it, and to me, it's one of the best drives, I think, of his career. But it's not even on the podium because of all the other stuff. So you literally get the gamut of what it's like to be a Lando Norris fan with this race today.
I think for Lando, and why I said this was one of the more entertaining races of the season, it's well and truly because of Lando, and I think that's easily the best drive of his career. And I'm going to say it's one of the more entertaining drives I've ever seen, I would say. I'm not going to say best because I think there were a couple things that he did that put him in a couple of those positions to have to make those overtakes. But seeing them kind of lap after lap, and to watch his pace, and he was at least on Hamilton's pace in the middle of making all of these overtakes, it was just nuts. And yeah, those last two overtakes at the end, like it's not anything you ever see in Mexico. And it was just awesome to watch. And I think all in all, I looked at it, I want to say he made, excluding the people that retired and Oscar letting him around, I think it was 13 passes for position throughout the course of the race, which is nuts. And like at the end, there's times he was like lapping with Verstappen as well. There's a couple times that like it was crazy. And I think Lando has been so good at qualifying that we kind of forget that he can do all of this. But because I think so many times this year, he's qualified where he should be and he kind of stays in the race where he should be. There's maybe some like getting around people in the beginning, but that's about it. And then it's kind of holding on to it. And I think he's incredibly quick, but we don't get to see him do all these overtakes, I don't think, because he normally is not that far out of position. So anyway, that was just so much fun to watch. And I think, though, on the flip side is where you remember that Piastri still has a long way to go. I think it seemed a lot closer. But when you get into these races where tire management is a thing, it's still not there for him. Lando is definitely still a leader of this team. Maybe down the line that changes, but right now, I think he definitely stamped his place.
Yeah, I agree that he definitely showed a lot stronger than Piastri this race. I also think a good charge through the field is a mark of, you know, the great drivers, and Lando really showed that he could do that too. Like you said, didn't do himself any favors at a couple points in the race, like spinning the tires on that red flag restart, but it just, you know, he lost the places. He got them right back throughout, you know, going up to the end of the race, and ended up getting another good finish with really good points out of it. So it was other than the start, I felt like watching him charge through the field was the most exciting part of the race.
Yeah, like I said, it was one of the more fun onboards that I've ever kind of watched of his in a long time. And, you know, parts where he, like I said, he could have easily started bitching and moaning about something that didn't go right. Not a word. And didn't yell at his engineer. Like I said, watching the last like 10 laps, like his engineer even comes on and goes, you know what Russell's going to do? And he's like, mate, I got it. No problem. And he just goes to work and does his thing and made Russell look like his tires had gone. And even though they were on the same compound of tires with the same life, one managed it a heck of a lot better than the other while pulling out overtakes. So, you know, Yeah, he doesn't have the win yet, but he's definitely the goods as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he's going to get there.
Anyway, yeah, I'll leave that there. All right, so now we'll transition into the podium. So the podium finishers were Charles Leclerc of Ferrari, Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes, that floor upgrade looking very, very good, and non-disqualification this time. And, of course, in P1, Thanos, who's just there, Red Bull, and Max Verstappen finished P1, moving 13 seconds clear of the field yet again. Big thoughts on the podium. Dee, I'll start with you, and then let Cody chime in.
Yeah, I think starting with Hamilton, it's good to see him happy again. It's good to see Mercedes making that jump. It's not so great to see the gap to Russell. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if they've developed the car just away from him. But he looked so competitive last year, and I think this year it's clearly been Hamilton in front of him. But I think, and the other thing that makes this frustrating is the tire whispers, which I would put obviously is Lewis. I'd probably put Norris in there now, who would have been such a great race for Sergio as well. Which again, just as makes little knife in the heart for this race. But yeah, I think just, I'm happy that those upgrades are working. I'm hopeful that now they understand what their car is doing and why, and that we can kind of carry this forward into next year.
Yeah, I think with all of the Red Bull seat drama, you know, will Checo keep his seat? Will Daniel Ricciardo take it? Will someone else take it? I think we've kind of not really been noticing that George Russell's, especially lately, is kind of having a stinker of a second half of the season, and is not keeping up with Lewis at all. You know, we've seen that George is a great driver and fast driver. You know, he outscored Lewis last year. He got his first win in pretty dominant fashion in Brazil. So we know he's got it, but he doesn't have it lately. Maybe losing the podium in Singapore, maybe took some wind out of his sails or something, but he's definitely the far weaker of the two Mercedes drivers. That said, it is really exciting to see Lewis Hamilton consistently back at the front. Was pretty disappointed that he lost that podium in the United States. So I'm very happy that he got to keep it this time. Also very happy to see that Charles Leclerc actually managed to get some fruit from his labor of getting that pole position and getting a podium out of it. So great performance by those two. And like I said, Max Verstappen is Thanos this season. I think move of the race. I mean, Lando had many great moves throughout the race, but you got to admit that threading between the Ferraris at the beginning and not crashing was a fantastic move on Max's part. Took the lead right at the start and never looked back. Even nailed the red flag restart and took off all over again. And at that point, it just becomes managing your pace, managing your tires, things that he does very, very well. I think because of managing the race and having the red flag in there, didn't finish quite as far out front as I was expecting maybe he would this time around, but still led pretty much the entire race. So, nothing's going to stop Max here. I just hope that next season, you know, I'm happy that Max got this extremely dominant season. It's exciting to see him breaking so many records and really seeing what he can do when he has the undoubtedly best car. But now that we've had this, I really hope that next year it closes back up a little bit.
So the DSQs got their redemption this week. I just think that's funny.
That's very true. And talk about not running afoul of the FIA. What did anybody think about Charles Leclerc not getting the meatball flag? I mean, if you're Gunther Steiner and you've seen that exact same thing, you have to be. I mean, they even said it on the broadcast. They said he was apoplectic. I mean, you had to think Gunther was probably like pacing around like, where is the fucking meatball flag? And it just never showed up.
I think Tsunoda said it this weekend. It might have been somebody else that was like, the top teams don't get penalized like we do, which I feel like sounds dramatic, but it kind of feels like that sometimes. It's much easier to meatball flag somebody that's in 15th or to somebody that's fighting for the win. So at that current moment, it's not great, but I'm not surprised.
It's definitely some gray area with that meatball flag because you know, it's a gray area deciding when is the car not in a safe condition to drive. You know, if a little bit's hanging off the car, they've decided in the past that if it's just hanging off the car, it's not safe. But unless you call that right away, we've seen a lot of times where that little side panel on the wing gets damaged, and within a lap or two, it flies off. And at that point, it's like, well, it's not on the car anymore, so it's not dangerous. And it did happen to go off at a part of the track where, you know, the field was still tightly packed together enough that they could have someone go out and retrieve that debris without causing any issues for the race. But yeah, I feel like those meatball flags, they gotta maybe almost try to make the call a little sooner, because it almost seems like at that point they're just kind of like waiting to see, well, is it going to come off? Is it going to become safe? And you know, if they go around a few laps and it hasn't come off, they're like, okay, it's not going to come off. It, you know, it's not safe. You got to do something about it. But, you know, it does kind of feel like they're trying to give a little bit of benefit of the doubt of, well, it might come off and then we might not have to, you know, give you the flag. Maybe it's not fair, but.
I mean, I'd buy that, except like when it happened to K-Mag, it was almost instantaneous. It was just like there it was. And it's just, it's very inconsistent. You know, FIA equals inconsistent, you know, exactly. It just does not equal anymore. And it does feel like at times there are two standards. I mean, yeah, nobody gets any action on the backing up in the pit lane thing. And what Logan Sargeant did was a penalty. I'm not defending what he did. But they throw the book at him, and they didn't throw the book at any of the major contenders. It just feels icky.
I can't – I don't know how many times it feels like a lot that Verstappen has been under investigation, and I think he's maybe gotten one penalty this year that I can think of.
Yeah.
But I think he's been – it just – it's crazy. Anyway. And they came out and admitted that they should have penalized. Anyway.
Exactly. It's like after that, I'm like, okay. Like, I even, when I was doing the coverage of the qualifying, and I'm like, this is the grid for now. I'm almost expecting it to change. And then I went out and did an errand. I came back, and I'm checking my phone, and they're like, no further action, no further action, no further action. I literally tweeted, this is why I'm not a steward. I don't get it anymore. I don't understand what it is.
It's also,
you're supposed to be
the stupid,
at
the minimum lap time rule. Everybody's always under investigation. It never goes anywhere. Like, I understand typically why it doesn't go anywhere, but it's like, then why did we do all this? We get why we do all this, so we don't back people up in sector three, but then we back people up in the pit lane. It's all dumb. Anyway, I'm done.
You see that in so many aspects of the FIA's decision-making. I mean, we've joked about many times that no driver is ever going to get suspended no matter where they're at with penalty points, because once they get really close to that limit and really close to that driver ban, race ban, that they pretty much stop giving out penalty points to them. And I feel like this is kind of the same deal, where it's like, you know, if everyone's doing it, we're not going to penalize everyone. If some people are doing it, we're just not going to worry about it. And we don't want to hand out the penalties. I don't know. It's very inconsistent, like you said, and I expect nothing more.
We expect the inconsistency at that point. I guess that's probably where I guess we'll leave it there. Yeah, I mean, you guys already kind of talked about Lewis. It's nice to see him rejuvenated. Hopefully that is a harbinger of something to come, because if it's him and Max going at it, you know there's going to be some spiciness afoot there. Those two are oil and water. They do not mix when they come together. And maybe that is somebody who can play in Max Verstappen's arena legitimately next year. So I do think the prospects for next year look very, very appealing for sure. But like Cody, like you said, I mean, this is just Max doing Max things. Throw a red flag at him, doesn't seem to matter. Manage both starts. The move, like you said, against both Ferraris, awesome start. I mean, what else can you say? Managed to pull the move off, managed to keep it on track. So one versus the other, and you see the difference between the two. But yeah, great drive for him. Record breaker drive for him. Now we move into the track where I don't know that he's going to be the favorite in Brazil necessarily, because I don't think that suits him, but we'll have to see. But anyway, we'll leave the Mexico GP here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come on back. We'll recap where all the standings are. We'll then open it up to our favorite segment, the fan email segment. We'll get your takes on what you saw this weekend. We've got some new contributors, which is good to see. We'll hand out our awards. We'll look at our predictions, and we'll sum up the weekend and head on out. So come on back, and we'll get into all of that in just a bit.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
Welcome back in. This is season 5. This is episode number 37 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2023 Mexico Grand Prix race review. And as always, we are proud members of the Ship It Studios podcast network. We've wrapped up the race result. So Cody, tell us about the driver standings, where all that shakes out, and I'll chime in with the teams.
All right. Your driver standings as of the Mexico City Grand Prix: Max Verstappen, championship sealed away. But he is still on the way to setting some serious point records. He's all the way up at 491 points. So he's going to be probably well over 500 points by the time the season's over. Meanwhile, Sergio Perez, his teammate, still holding on to second place with 240 points, helped out a little bit by Hamilton's disqualification at the last race. But Hamilton is right back on his tail with that second place finish. He is in third place in the points, only 20 points behind Checo with 220. Carlos Sainz, the higher of the two Ferrari drivers, he's holding on to fourth place with 183 points. I would say just barely, but it's going to be not barely, very soon, very soon, because Fernando Alonso still in fifth place, tied on points with Sainz at 183 for now. Unfortunately, those Aston Martins look like they've fallen off a cliff, so he's probably going to just keep slipping back for these next few races. That will be of benefit to Lando Norris, who is having a great second half of the season. He is in sixth place for McLaren with 169 points. He is just in front of the other Ferrari driver, Charles Leclerc, in seventh place with 166 points. In eighth place, George Russell with Mercedes with 151. And then we have a pretty good gap down to Oscar Piastri in ninth place, for McLaren with 87 points, and 10th place, Pierre Gasly for Alpine with 56 points.
All right. So the top of the team standings don't see huge differences, but the bottom of the team standings have changed quite a lot. In first place, no surprise here, Red Bull Racing powertrains on a planet of their own, 731 points. In second place is Mercedes. They check in with 371. Third place is Ferrari. They check in with 349. Fourth place, McLaren Mercedes, opening up the gap a bit on the Aston Martins now, 256 points for them. Fifth place, Aston Martin, they remain on 236. Looks like it's going to be probably fifth place for them this year. Sixth place, Alpine, firmly entrenched in that position. They are up to 101 points. Seventh place, here's where it gets very interesting. Williams leads the bunch right now with 28 points. Eighth place, moving up two spots with Danny Ricks' big good finish this weekend. That is AlphaTauri. They are tied with P9 Alfa Romeo Ferrari on 16 points. But because of Danny Ricks' finish, being the better of the points finishers for those two teams, AlphaTauri has the tiebreaker. And in 10th place now with 12 points and looking very lost, apparently, from all the articles I'm reading. Haas Ferrari with 12 points. But everybody in the points and everybody in the double-digit points. And it's been a while since we can say that, at least for sure. All right.
I saw somewhere that Haas will be the best of the worst in recent, like the last 10 years.
It's very glass half full.
They finished
here. Yeah. All right. So enough of our takes on the Mexico GP weekend that was. We'll now open up to your takes on the weekend fan email segment. We've got some regulars. We've got some new people this weekend as well. D, it is your time to shine. So have at it. And here we go.
Okay. So Rachel Fleming, and this looks like a long one, so get ready, says, well, that was Mexico, a race that I'm 99.9% certain that as soon as Sergio retires, will get dropped quicker than Max winning a race. Contracts mean nothing. I think India still has a contract for a race. Oh, as in Mexico. Got it. That confused me for a second. Sorry. Anyway, continuing on. All I can say for Sergio is that he learned nothing from what Lewis did in Qatar. Though the boos for Charles, though inevitable, was very harsh, but I suppose the crowd didn't care for the analysis just for the fact that Sergio was out. But this might be another nail in the coffin for Sergio and his time at Red Bull. Even Brundle was now taking note of it. If the title fight is even remotely closer, this form simply isn't good enough. This is Gasly bad now. Good race from Lando and Danny Ric. 21 drivers out of 22 who raced this season have now half points. Does that include a medical card too? Who knows?
It might.
But what has happened to Aston Martin? These updates have added fat, not muscle, to that car, probably the worst car this weekend. Finally, a relief to see K-Mag walk away from that wreck, which was a Haas. Those first shots really did take me back to Mick in Monaco and Saudi. Well, it's Brazil next. Here's hoping for something to stop Thanos. Spoiler, it won't be Sergio. I saw something else because she compared Perez to Gasly. Albon in 2020 scored 32% of Red Bull's points, and that's exactly what Sergio is scoring right now. So, oh, wow. If they were willing to drop Albon, I think, unfortunately, we all know where this is headed.
Yeah, but they also weren't in a position at that point where Albon was still second in the points. I think had that been the case, they might have given him a little bit more.
But I mean, the performance deficit that they each had to each other, I think, is yeah, rather glaring.
Yeah, I mean, it is what the British would say, sticky bum time for one Sergio Perez after this weekend, I think, for sure. Yeah, the pressure's only going to ramp up. This was probably what you would have thought his best possible weekend to maybe score some good points, take some pressure off. He had some pressure off with the Hamilton DSQ. That is now completely turned around. Now they're right back kind of where they started almost two rounds ago. Good news is for Sergio, there's only three rounds left. So can he hang on to that P2 and at least make the case, hey, I was at least in P2. I held on to it. Don't fire me because of it. But it just seems like the rumors are mounting, the vultures are circling, and it just seems not to add up for good things for one Sergio Perez. I mean, we already talked about Aston Martin. We talked about the K-Mag incident. It was kind of scary. It was very scary looking. I was very happy to see Magnussen get up and out of the car. Some Saudi vibes from last year with Mick. I can definitely see that. It wasn't as scary in that it wasn't as blind, or there wasn't the car taking off and going backwards. It was just spinning. At least it was on the ground. So that was at least a little bit helpful there. We talked about Lando and Danny Ric. Actually, it was a funny thing. When I was listening to Lando's onboard, his engineer, who obviously knows who Daniel is, when the McLaren code is to refer to your teammate by the first name and everybody else by their last name. Well, when he's approaching Daniel Ricciardo, he goes, gap to Daniel, 5.something seconds. And he goes, oh, excuse me, gap to Ricciardo, 5.7 seconds. So a bit of a Freudian slip, meaning that at least, you know, maybe Danny didn't do well in the McLaren, but he was definitely well-liked. Let's put it that way.
All right. So next up, Dave Doherty says, your thoughts on Lando since he was driver of the day and Ricardo since he got the AlphaTauri in the points. And I think we've done a bit of talking on both of these, but if anybody has anything else.
Nothing new to add. Anything else kind of already stated.
Yeah. Yep. And I think we'll probably touch on both here in a second a little bit more. So final comment is from Andrea Hanna.
Yep.
Is that right? Anyway. Okay. Outstanding by Norris. Also Daniel Ricciardo and, of course, Max and Lewis. The Ferrari did better than expected. Alonso got overtaken by Sargent. Aston Martin is a mess. Russell isn't having a good time either. I think we've touched on all of these here, and we're in agreement.
Fernando Alonso is looking like, God, he looked like he made, for once, such a great career decision with the team he was going to at the beginning of the season, getting all those podiums. And I guess, you know, that might still turn out to be the case. We don't know what's going to happen next year, and he does still have all those podiums under his belt. But, man, he's got to be, you know, looking at how the team's doing right now and being like, really hope this picks up again next year because he's running out of teams to go to.
The egg timer is now ticking. The Fernando Alonso throw my team under the bus egg timer is now in full motion. It is now up and running, and we're just going to wait until we see if it goes off or not, because it's coming. The rant is a coming. He doesn't have the age. He doesn't have the patience in order to wait any longer. He needs to be winning now. Otherwise, what's he doing here? He's basically literally blocking the seat of somebody younger who could be sitting in that seat at this point. Unless Aston Martin can get it ready or show Alonso quick. Like I said, the timer's ticking. Let's just sit back and wait to see what blows up. All right. So thank you to all of the contributors. It's good to see Andrea being a new contributor, new follower to the show, and welcome along. And we're happy to have you as part of the contribution to the show. If you'd like to become a contributor, just shoot us a DM, reply to the tweet that I put up at the end of every race, and we'll get you on the show and we'll react to your thoughts on the race. All right, so now it's time to transition into our awards. And as we are apt to do, we start with what goes in the bin. A couple good candidates here. Cody, I'll let you go first. What you got for rubbish?
I really don't want to give him the rubbish award because I like him a lot. But I think I got to give my rubbish award to Sergio Perez. Like I said, it would have been so cool had it actually worked. But like you guys said, there was pretty much no chance that it was going to work, and he threw away his race in the first turn, his home race, because of that. So my rubbish award goes to Checo for not looking at the race as a whole and just looking at that first turn and seeing standing at the top of that podium. Could have probably still stood on the podium, but yet he's only 20 points clear in second place now, so he's got to pick it back quick, and there's only a couple races left to do it.
All right. D, what you got for rubbish?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to have to go the same direction. It's just your heart breaks for him. I think seeing him in the car, like crying right after that happened, like you know how much it means to him. But I think, unfortunately, that first corner, it was all emotion, all in one go. I think everything that he's been feeling recently and all the pressure he's been under, and it unfortunately just resulted in the worst possible outcome. I hope he can find a way to turn it around. This doesn't help anything, and it's just unfortunate to watch.
So I have two candidates for here. One, to the fan who in the 4-0 soul section thought it was a good idea to start attacking Charles Leclerc supporters. I don't know if he was prompted or whatever that was. Out of here with that. Apparently they've already identified the guy. He's been given supposedly a lifetime ban. Don't need to see that at a racetrack ever. That was kind of scary. And kudos to the mega-sized Checo fan who pulled him off of the guys he was trying to lay on. That dude deserves probably a medal of heroism for stopping that. And where the hell was the security where all that was going on? Way too slow, way too late. That's a problem that needs to get looked at for sure. And then my other candidate, apparently this is the weekend where we also learned that it's really bad to spread unfounded rumors. Because if you've been anywhere on F1 social media in the last 36 to 48 hours, it's rampant. Look at what you did by saying something very simple. Maybe you didn't think it was going to be like this, but don't do that. Like if you know something, either let's say what you know, or if you can't report it, say I can't report it, but I'm going to confirm it. But don't just put something cryptic out there with right now where the state of social media is. It's just crazy. I've heard so many rampant rumors. I can't believe any of them at this point. I don't believe anything at this point, even from the blue checkmark people. So I'm not going with anything. And we've kind of been really quiet on this. And I'm not going with anything until I like triple verify it at this point, because right now things are just a little bit stupid out there. All right. Enough said about that. We'll move into analysis paralysis. Cody, we'll start with you. What you got?
I don't know if I can really say that this is analysis paralysis restricted to just the Mexico City Grand Prix, but I'm still going to give it to Aston Martin, because whatever analysis they did to their car to bring those upgrades, they're not working, or at least they didn't work here. Aston Martin is pretty much in free fall at this point. They could have held on to some of the you know, the upper middle positions in the Constructors' Championship and the driver standings. But it looks like they're not even going to be able to hold on to that at this point because they're not scoring any points. So unless they get something put together really quickly in these last three races, like you said, Fernando Alonso, that egg timer is ticking. I hope that they can figure it out for his sake.
D, what's your thought on analysis paralysis?
This one's hard because the red flag, I think, flattered a lot of these strategies that were probably going to go awry, or kind of hindered a couple other people. Maybe Ferrari, because they did pit before the red flag, and then they kept their drivers on the same set of hards after the god-awful start they had in the first stint. So maybe they probably would have, and they kept talking about this crossover point with the hards and the mediums that never came. So I don't know, maybe their drivers would have stood a better chance had they stuck them back on mediums. And I can't help myself. I have to give Ferrari one of these two awards every week. So here it is.
Oh, well, we're sticking with plan A. And then they all liked plan A. And I'm like, I don't like your plan A.
That is the first time they stuck to a plan A, but it was not
right. Exactly. I'm like, I kept sitting here going, yeah, but it's a bad plan A. Maybe you should get off of it. But yeah. Anyway, don't like calling out my own boys, but I have to do so here. Got to give this one to McLaren for getting way too cute with the tires on Saturday. Then you didn't fuel the car right. You cost Lando big time, despite the recovery drive that he had on Sunday. Now, I will say on the other side of that, the race strategy of actually starting him on softs, putting him then on the hard tire stint, and then finishing him on the mediums was, I think, a really good strategy. You didn't see it in full fruition because of the red flag thing. But if that's just a safety car, he's sitting really good with new tires in P10 there. So I thought the strategy call was the right one, but the Saturday strategy call is just non-forgivable. Your car is fast. Just be straightforward with it. You don't have to do the cute, tricky games anymore. We should kind of be – we have to start thinking in terms of we're good. So let's act like we're good and not have to try to back our way into stuff anymore. But anyway, I will leave that there. Dark horse of the day. I think this one's probably going to be universal, but D, I'll let you go first.
I'm going with Daniel Ricciardo. Score points for AlphaTauri. That is not an easy feat.
Cody, what's your thought?
I'm in the same boat. Goes to Daniel Ricciardo. If you had told me before the weekend that you thought he was going to qualify fourth and finish seventh, I would have thought that you were a very, very big Daniel Ricciardo fan, if a little bit of a foolish one. But I was wrong, and man, he had a hell of a weekend. So good on him.
Yeah, and because he gives me an opportunity on almost the one-year anniversary of the last time I did this, it's Daniel Ricciardo. Daniel Ricciardo. Yeah, great drive, great qualifying, great way to look like yourself again. And I hope, I really do hope, this is the harbinger of things to come. And I hope that he bet on himself comes to fruition and he gets what he wants out of this, whether it's in the AlphaTauri seat or whether it's in the Red Bull seat. Because I think that AlphaTauri seat is actually going to look pretty damn good and appealing next year, especially if they're using an RB19 as your baseline. That's still going to be a really good car. So look out for them next year too. But yeah, good on you, Danny. All right. So we will now transition to driver of the day. D, I'll let you go first on this one, then Cody, and then I'll close it out.
Yep. Easy Lando Norris for me. I think, as I said earlier, one of the more entertaining drives I've seen in a long time. So yeah, that was a very easy decision.
Yeah, I think we got a... probably another unanimous decision coming here, because I also went with Lando Norris, despite having, you know, minor mishap on the red flag restart that cost him a lot of spots. He took it on the chin and, gave us pretty much most of the entertainment throughout the race, with how well he was flying through the field, and turned a really bad qualifying session into a really, better than decent, race finish. So yep, going to Lando.
Yeah, I mean, I will agree. I will definitely give my driver of the day to Lando. For one, for passing more cars than I do on the Dan Ryan in my morning commute most days. If you're from Chicago, you'll know what that means and you'll know why that's kind of funny. But just, you know, again, it's kind of a microcosm of what you get when you follow him a lot. You get some not so good, you get some meh, and then you get some really great. And that last stint, that was him locked in. I've not seen him locked in like that in a long time. Even when he's challenging at the front, he's not necessarily all that locked in. If that race gone 10 more laps, he's on the podium. There's just no doubt in my mind. He was just doing things with that car that I'd not seen people do in a car in a very long time. So hopefully, again, that's a harbinger of things to come. Clean up some stuff on the team side next weekend, and let's go get him in Brazil, because let's see if we can have some real fun. All right. So we will now talk a little bit about predictions. We both did really well. We both did really well. Cody, you got 6 points. It's one of, I think, our combined scores. This is probably one of our best ones. You got the pole sitter. You got the quality lap time. You got P1 on the podium. You got P2 on the podium. You get the P14 bonus pick. And because Checo did not score, I think we had, what did we have? We had Checo. Oh, does Mexico get to see its hero on the podium? That did not happen. So you get the prop bet as well. I bested you by one. I got 7. I got the pole sitter, P1 on the podium, P2 on the podium, fastest lap time, fastest lap driver. Thank you, Lewis, on the last lap there. I got the P16 bonus pick because of Logan Sargeant. So I backed into that one. And then I also got the prop bet as well. So at some point, I will dig out where we really are for the year, and I'll try to recompute that. But it's good to know that at least I'm giving you a fight now here and there.
Yeah, I think at this point we're probably pretty close, and I would definitely rather lose to you like 6-7 than 2-3, because yeah, at exactly. least it makes it look like we kind of know what we're doing.
Yeah, every now and again we the stars align and the dirty drag gets off of our predictions and we actually kind of know what we're talking about. But anyway, so I guess that's kind of the end of the rundown. So we will now turn around and we'll focus on Brazil, which is coming thick and fast. If you didn't like the fact that this wasn't a sprint weekend, guess what? We have one more for you. It's coming yet again, the last sprint weekend of the season. Love Brazil, love that track, love the fans. Love the fact that it's on at a decent time for us. So it's a good chance to maybe go do some watch parties or something like that. So if you happen to be around that, feel free to go take advantage of them if it's in your town. It's a good time. This is where I met actually, James and John was at the Brazil watch party a few years ago. So if I don't go to that, I'm not sitting here tonight. So, you know, look at all that. But anyway, any final thoughts on the Mexico weekend or the Brazil weekend to come?
I think we've had a couple in this triple header. The first two races were pretty good. And now we're headed to my favorite track. And so I'm always excited for this one no matter what. So can't wait.
Yeah, this seems like, I mean, Brazil is always a track that has, you know, some of the best races that we've seen in Formula One. And judging by the results last year, it's also one of the few tracks where other teams can take it to Red Bull. So looking forward to that possibility as well.
Yeah, I think this is probably one where we're going into a bit of the unknown as to who's going to be really good, because I think you've got two or three teams that could really put something in. Qualifying is very important. Where you start tends to help you out in the race. So we will see how all of that goes. Thanks, Dee and Cody, for hopping on tonight. Stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break. We will then re-rack. Cody and I will do our quickie Brazil preview segment. Dee, I think we're going to have a long night. Thank you very much for being sporty and hopping on tonight. We appreciate it. And as always, folks, may all your laps be fast.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
All right, welcome back in. This is season 5. This is episode 37. It's the bonus segment on top of the Mexican GP race review. This is our quickie down and dirty Brazil Grand Prix preview. So when we have these triple headers, this may be what we end up having to do for a little bit, because the recordings come at you very, very thick and fast. And this is just a little bit better. We don't have to do as much schedule juggling. So you've got Andy and I'm just with my normal. We've let Dee get a head start on her night, and now it's just Andy and Cody with you tonight. We'll just hop straight into the track facts. We're going to the Autodromo in Brazil.
The Autodromo José Carlos Pache, I think is how you say it.
That's it. There you go. Thank you. See, this is what a good co-host does. He covers for his other guy. All right. So, Cody, tell us about the Autodromo Juan José Carlos Pache.
All right. So we are going to Interlagos at the Autodromo José Carlos Pache for the Sao Paulo Grand Prix. Track Rex brought to you by Pirelli Motorsport. Track's located in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Number of laps around the track is 71 for the Grand Prix. Track length is 2.677 miles. That's 4.309 kilometers. Tire selection from Pirelli for this race is the C2, C3, and C4 tire compound. Track characteristics are a 3 out of 5 for traction, 3 out of 5 for braking, 3 out of 5 for tire stress, 3 out of 5 for lateral load, 4 out of 5 for track evolution, 3 out of 5 for asphalt grip, 4 out of 5 for asphalt abrasion, and a 4 out of 5 for downforce. So kind of right down the middle for all of the track characteristics. Qualifying lap record goes to Valtteri Bottas in 2018, and that was a 1 minute 7.281 seconds. The race lap record also set by Bottas in the same year, 2018. That was a 1 minute 10.540 seconds. Now, we've been racing around Brazil for a long time, so most wins at this track on the current configuration goes to Alan Prost with 6 wins, followed by a tie between Rudiman and Mike Schumacher with 4 wins apiece. Next would be a tie between Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton with 3 wins each, and a big bunch of other retired drivers each have 2 wins here. Too many to list. Most constructor wins around Brazil, we have 12 from McLaren, 11 from Ferrari, 6 from Williams, 6 from Mercedes, 5 from Red Bull, and 2 from Renault. So a good mix of old and new teams with wins around this track. What does the circuit like, Andy?
All right. Like many pre-World War II tracks, Interlagos features banked corners with the drivers beginning their lap on a sort of half-oval. In fact, between 1957 and the track's return to the F1 calendar in 1990, Interlagos could be run as a giant oval. After wiggling through the Senna S and down to Turn 4, the drivers go through a sneaking infield section with some challenging camber changes before slinging back up the hill and through the banked final turn. As for the weather, and of course, weather always seems to play a role in Brazil. And again, we have a sprint weekend, so it's 3 days of weather to be aware of. For the qualifying on Friday, partly cloudy in the morning, thunderstorms developing later in the day, high of 86 degrees, winds out of the north-northwest at 10 to 20, a 70% chance of rain during the day. When's it going to hit? That's the question. For the sprint, looks like that'll be kind of done with the rain after Friday. Partly cloudy skies, high around 80, winds out of the west-southwest, so wind turning around at 10 to 15 miles per hour. And for the race on Sunday, partly cloudy skies, a high of 72, so right down the middle, winds out of the southeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. So wind and maybe some rain on tap this weekend. All right. We will just go ahead and hop right into our predictions. Choose your champion predictions game. I'm doing better than I have been in the last couple weekends, but we both did a really good Mexico GP weekend. So Cody, we'll start with the pole sitter. And as a reminder, last year's pole sitter, just because I love to say it, was Kevin Magnussen in traditional qualifying. But what do you got for the pole sitter this go round?
Well, barring something crazy happening again, I got a feeling it's not going to be Kevin Magnussen setting the pole here. I'm going with a fan favorite around Brazil. I'm going Lewis Hamilton setting the pole time.
All right. Very good. I like that pick. I think we've kind of themed this as things we want to see happen, not necessarily things we think are going to happen. Although Lewis Hamilton, I think, is a very good pick. I'm giving it to a guy who I think is that close. He's that close, and maybe this tech, the topography, just gives him that little bit of an edge. The fact that Red Bull isn't going to be the dominant car, I'm going Homer. I don't care. I'm going Lando Norris for pole. Thought he could have had something in Qatar. Maybe he's got something here. Let's see what happens. So that's my pick for pole. So the qualifying pole lap last year in those tricky mixed conditions was a 111.674. We've got some disparity in our lap time, so this will be an interesting one. I'm thinking it's going to be dry by the time they get to Q3. Will it be wet in other sessions? Maybe. So I'm going to go pretty close to kind of chalk here. A little bit slower, though. 108.297. Cody, what's your thought?
I am going the other direction, and I'm thinking it's going to be wet during Q3. So I'm going a little closer to the time that Magnussen set last year, and I'm going with a 1 minute 11.500.
All right, very good. So we will now move into our race prediction, the traditional race prediction. We will talk about the sprint when we get to our prop bet, so hang on, we're not done with it. But our race, the race podium last year, George Russell taking his maiden F1 victory, Lewis Hamilton in second, and Carlos Sainz coming in third. All right, Cody, what you got for your race podium?
Again, going with what I want to happen. At this point, I will take a win from anybody not named Max Verstappen, as much as I like him. So I'm going with the idea that Mercedes is going to be strong here again this year. They didn't know why they were strong here last year, but they were. So I'm hoping it happens again. I'm going Lewis Hamilton taking the win, his first in too long. Max Verstappen coming in second place for a change, and Lando Norris finishing out the podium.
All right, very good. I'm in a similar vein to you. As much as I want to give Lando the first victory here, as much as I would love to say, see, I told you he was going to get a win, I just don't see it happening over the course of the full race. Haven't said anything about the sprint, though. So I'm going to give it to Lewis Hamilton, because I've been also saying, if you're a Mercedes fan, this is the track to get excited for. The crowd is with Lewis here. It's almost like a second home race for him. He's going to be inspired by Ayrton Senna. It always happens that way. The Brazilian fans and him just tend to mesh really well together. So yeah, I'm going to give this one to Lewis Hamilton. I think this is the race where finally something weird happens to Mr. Max. So I've got Lando Norris in second, and I've got Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari, because I think they can, the lap around here is a little easier on its tires. So maybe the Ferrari tire problems aren't so bad here. Car's still quick. Charles Leclerc to come home in third. All right, so now we'll move on to our fastest lap in the driver, and that was in 2022 was George Russell, took that honor with a 113.785, again, in some kind of changeable conditions. So Cody, what's your thought on that?
I'm going to go with Max Verstappen setting the fastest lap, and I'm going to say he's going to do it with a 1 minute 13.784.
All right, very good. I've got Lewis Hamilton taking that honor. I think this is just a track that suits him very, very well. And I'm going closer to what I think the dry lap time will be, 111.584. Mm-hmm. Okay, so for bonus picks, Cody, you picked back to kind of traditional way, P4, P5, P6. I like that. I'm going to go with P4. Let's just double down on the McLaren love this weekend. Oscar Piastri to come home P4. Carlos Sainz to come home P5, and George Russell, not anywhere near his teammate yet again. Not probably going to defend his race victory this weekend, but I got George Russell coming home P6. Notice I don't have Max Verstappen anywhere in the top six. So
now that is bold.
All right, Cody, what's your thought?
I have Russell redeeming himself a little bit, if not being on the podium. I've got George Russell coming in fourth place, and then I'm going to use the 5 and 6 spots to squeeze in the Ferraris. So I got Charles Leclerc coming in fifth and Carlos Sainz coming in sixth.
All right, very good. And so our prop bet this week, is since we have a sprint, we might as well predict the sprint podium. So a chance for 3 additional points on offer here. I'm going to go, this is where I am going to go Homer. I don't know if he's going to do it in the full race, I think he sure as hell could do it in a sprint race if he get those tires right. Lando Norris to come home P1. Lewis Hamilton, I still think, will be very strong, but maybe he doesn't go for it all out in the sprint. So Lewis Hamilton P2. Max is going to score this weekend. I don't know that I got him scoring on Sunday, but I do think he will be there. You can't ignore him. So Max Verstappen to come home P3 in what I hope is a very entertaining sprint.
All right. That would make it a very entertaining sprint. It would also put both Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri in the weird category of having a race win without it being a Grand Prix win. So it'd be a little bit of a weird stat. I, on the other hand, I've got Max Verstappen taken.
Perfect for me as a McLaren fan. I just, you know,
yeah,
that's just how we roll.
Weird success, but success nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I think it's going to be kind of more of the same for the sprint. I've got Max Verstappen taking the sprint win, followed by Hamilton in P2 and Charles Leclerc in P3. So I guess a repeat of the Mexico podium for the sprint race.
All right, very good. All right, so our session times for the Brazil GP weekend line up pretty good with, I think, the general day. Practice one kicks off, and these are all Eastern times. Practice one kicks off 10:30 a.m. Eastern, qualifying set for 2 p.m. Eastern. The sprint shootout, which will be on Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, followed by the sprint. Again, there's that big gap again. I don't know if that's like codified or something, but here it is again. 10 a.m. all the way to 2:30 in the afternoon for the actual sprint itself. So big gap there. And the race itself kicks off 12 o'clock Eastern, 11 a.m. if you're in the central time zone. So it like lines up pretty well with the rest of your Sunday. So yeah, I guess that's our Brazil. We'll kind of set the stage unless we find out what that big rumor is. And if so, keep it tuned to our social media. If there's anything I can actually go with, we will do the best to try to take you through the rest of the weekend. Looks like for the review, it's going to be D and myself on Sunday night. So we'll hopefully get this back out at kind of our normal timing, at least for this weekend. But appreciate both Deanna and Cody being flexible with schedules. These triple headers are not easy things to do. So appreciate both of you guys hopping on and doing our thing. And so we'll like I said, we'll continue to move with the water over the course of the weekend. And we'll recap it all on Sunday night. And then we'll take a little break. And then we'll get ready for Vegas. Which is going to be a thing, one way or another. It will be a thing. But anyway, Cody, any final thoughts as we head into Brazil?
I think it's going to be, you know, it's got room to be one of the best races of the year. Now that I've said that, it's going to be really boring, probably. But here's to hoping it's a good one. Here's to hoping that someone else can take that top step on the podium for a change. And, get some good old traditional racing in at a beloved track before we go try out whatever Vegas is going to be.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. All right. So yeah, like I said, we will, we'll be around all weekend long. Keep it tuned to our social media for any big news events that happen over the course of that weekend. And we'll take you through the qualifying. I'll try to take you through the sprint qualifying. Cause that's what we do. All right. So for Cody, for Deanna, it's been Andy. Always fun to do this. We love to do it. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at @OutlapF1Podcast. Or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.